Gar and I, as you know, as we sit here together and talk about this, we understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. We don't run away from it. We accept it. That's on us.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA, your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
For me to be here in the NBA organization, such a historic organization, the Chicago Bulls, so it's just a dream come true for me.
Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
This is going to be a process. You'll snap your fingers and it all happens at once, but that's the plan moving forward.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day. Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm Jordan Malley along with Matt Peck. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel. Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Remember, follow us on social media on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, and anywhere you find podcasts, you'll find us. Make sure to follow the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. So we're back with a shortened version of the show today. We're going to jump right into our weekly segment here as we gave you guys a pretty long episode yesterday. Not much has turned out, and we've got a Bulls game tonight. So we want to jump right into your questions, though. We kind of skipped over them last week, so we want to make sure we can address all the questions that were brought to our attention. Should be pretty fun. We've got some interesting ones to start. But Matt, what's going on? And you can go ahead and start us off with some of these questions here.
Absolutely, Jordan. And thanks to all of you who sent in your questions to us. As a reminder, we do our mailbag segment every Wednesday. So anytime throughout the week, if you have a question for us, anything Bulls related, NBA related, just tweet at us at Locked On Bulls, or you can email us at LockedOnBulls@gmail.com. So our first question today comes from Kinu on Twitter, and he says, "You talk and talk about trading Nico. But should the Bulls rather have him around with the second unit, even in the future? I'd rather trade Denzel, who is absolutely unable to drive to the basket and finish. Somehow Denzel has been shooting decently enough, though." Thanks for the question, Kinu. And it kind of sounds like he's kind of wishy-washy on whether or not he thinks Denzel should be a part of this Bulls rebuild moving forward, citing the fact that he has been shooting better this season than his rookie season, but is still struggling to finish at the rim, saying, "Wouldn't you rather trade Denzel than trade Nico, keep Nico around for this for the future, as especially the way he's been playing recently?" So, Jordan, what are your thoughts on that?
Sure. I mean, that's in a perfect world. That's a nice scenario. But realistically, what other NBA team's going to be interested in Denzel Valentine? Especially he hasn't played all that well during this win streak. So, I mean, what are you going to, in terms of value, Denzel Valentine is down there with next to nothing. I don't imagine the Bulls are going to get a whole lot for him. And why would teams be interested in him, especially a competitor? So it'd be like swapping Denzel Valentine with somebody else on a tanking sort of rebuilding team. I just don't see any type of value or any type of interest around the NBA for him right now. In terms of Nico, we talk about him so much because really, realistically, he's one of the handful of trade pieces that has potential high value for a competing team. So that's like when we were talking about taking on those large contracts, teams that are looking to compete in the playoffs, some teams, like a lot of teams around, like you look at the Wizards, you look at the Lakers, a variety of teams that are in the playoff hunts have bad contracts that are sitting on their bench. So that would be more advantageous for the Bulls to be able to move Nico to a competitive team and might be able to cash in on more from those teams than rather swapping it with, say, a rebuilding or tanking team. But ultimately, I think in terms of every player on the Bulls, you've got the most value, and especially the way Nico's been playing over these six games. In terms of value, what the Bulls can trade, I think Nico's got the highest value as of right now.
Yeah, I would agree. And as far as Kinu's comment about, you know, wouldn't you rather trade Denzel? Maybe. I think Bulls fans can, for the most part, agree that we're disappointed with what Denzel has been at the NBA level. But I think we all kind of expected that, right? He was a four-year guy under Tom Izzo. So he had that high pedigree of a well-rounded college basketball experience, but he came in a little bit older than most of the guys that are taken in the first round. And he was never a great athlete. Like, that was never really his thing. You talk about his inability to drive to the basket and finish. That's not what he did at Michigan State. So I don't know why that's what you were expecting him to do at the NBA level. I think he has started to find his niche role on this Bulls team as a shooter, and he's shooting the ball more confidently this season. But he's also shown us some flashes of ability as a distributor. He's made some very nice passes in certain big moments of games this season thus far. And yeah, his game is a mess in the mid-range and, you know, up close towards the rim. He, for whatever reason, just cannot finish. His layups are laughably bad. But, I mean, that's the unfortunate matter of fact. And because of that, and because he is already 24 in his second year and not very athletic, what kind of trade value are you getting there? What kind of NBA teams are knocking on the Bulls' door calling up Gar and Paxson to say, hey, we want this Denzel Valentine kid? I think everybody in the NBA knows what Denzel Valentine's ceiling is in this league, and it's a ceiling that's not very high. Now, Nico, on the other hand, we've seen in this crazy six-game winning streak the Bulls are on the best version of Nico that we have ever seen. And the best version of Nico is far and away a greater value than the best version of Denzel Valentine that we've seen thus far. So I think that pretty much answers the question.
Yeah, and to Denzel Valentine's credit a little bit here, it is only his second year, and so he's still developing. Nico's been in the league for 4 years. They play completely different positions. They're different players. So it's like comparing apples and oranges at this point. Just to give a little bit of a background on what Denzel Valentine has been doing in terms of just checking in on what he's been doing in December, it's a slight downtick in shots he's taking, which is actually kind of surprising. He's taking a slight downtick since November, shooting 39.7% from the field. He's only shooting 25% from three, so that's kind of troubling that he's not knocking down threes like he was in November. In November, he was shooting 42% from three, so it was, like I said, not the greatest performance behind the arc from Denzel Valentine. I think he's starting to realize, too, in these wins that his role might be more of a rebounding and contributor and like a pass first type of guard. And even when he's playing the three, if he's playing, having to guard forwards, he's realizing that, I think, using his mind, his basketball IQ, which is really high. I mean, he went to Michigan State, played under Tom Izzo, and he was that guy for Michigan State, too. And I know we keep kind of harping on that and keep going back to that, but you can't forget everything that he's learned there. And I think that's going to be an important part and an important role for Denzel Valentine. I don't think he's going to be any type of superstar, but if he can be a guy that can be a rotation player for you anywhere 7 to 10 on that bench, I think that's what you're looking at for Denzel Valentine. I know he went on that hot streak and we talked about what is really his ceiling. Could his ceiling be sixth man? I don't know. He's kind of come back down to earth since we did talk about that. So I think if Denzel Valentine's a guy that you can stick between 7 and 10 on your bench, I think you're satisfied given where he was taken and kind of his progression. And it's also, too, you know, he's older than a lot of guys on this Bulls team. He's 24 already, too, so that's another thing to play a factor in. I don't think any other NBA teams around the league really care or really interested in Denzel Valentine like they would be in Nico. So let's get to the next question here. This one comes from Aaron on Twitter as well. So after last night, if you didn't get to catch any of the NCAA action, but this kind of goes along with that. So he says, is Trae Young a possible guy the Bulls could consider drafting even with Dunn at the helm? What do you think about this, Matt?
That's an interesting question from Aaron, and thanks for the question, Aaron. To those Bulls fans who haven't watched Trae Young play a game of basketball yet, stop what you're doing with the next time Oklahoma has a game and go watch him. I think they got a game against Northwestern this Friday, I believe. Oklahoma's 9-1 on the year, and they definitely have had the softer part of their schedule, you know, to begin the season. They definitely have a lot more complicated and challenging matchups with some other Big 12 opponents and nationally ranked opponents down the stretch before the tournament and March Madness comes around. So it'll be interesting to see if Trae Young can keep up these kind of performances when the matchups get more difficult. But in their game against Northwestern State just last night, he put up 26 points and 22 assists. I mean, that is insane. He actually tied the NCAA D1 record for assists in one game with his 22. And he scored 26 points on top of that. Right now, he's leading all D1 players in points per game at 28.5 and assists at 10.2. I mean, just insane numbers. And we've talked about the fact that Colin Sexton up to this point has been the highest point guard in this draft class on most people's draft boards. And, you know, they're both freshmen, but I feel like Sexton at to start the season was the more known prospect because people weren't really talking about Trey Young. If you compare their numbers though, per 40 minutes played basis, because Young plays a little bit more per game than Sexton does, I mean, Trey Young is winning. 35.2 points per 40 minutes compared to Sexton's 29.7, 10.9 assists to just 4.5 for Sexton. Trey Young shooting just 37.5% from deep, whereas Sexton is shooting 47.1, so 10 points higher. However, Trey Young does take a lot more threes per game than Sexton does, and Trey Young's degree of difficulty on his shots are like Steph Curry levels of difficult when he's launching from downtown. So I think the big difference between the two, Trey Young is a much more gifted passer, and you can see that in his assist numbers. He's got great floor vision.
This is what I'll say about Trey Young. I know everybody's been really excited about him too, and I am too. I think a few things that are going to help him, and going back to the original question about whether or not it'd be a guy that the Bulls look at, I think a couple factors are going to help Trey Young in terms of this draft. First of all, it's been noted as sort of a weaker point guard class in terms of, you know, your top guys. You talked about it. It's Trey Young, Colin Sexton, and then everybody else. So I think that's going to help him in terms of his draft stock. Let's remember, too, college basketball is weird in the sense that guys that you think are going to be at the top of the draft class somehow end up, there's always two or three guys that end up falling, going in later rounds, aren't scouted as the players that they thought they were once, you know, at the beginning of the season, coming to the end of the season. So with Trey Young, I think it's going to help. Like you said, his numbers are off the chart. It's ridiculous what he's doing right now for Oklahoma. And his offensive rating right now, just through the first 12 games, is at 130.4. That is absolutely ridiculous. His offensive box plus minus, so that's just taking in per 100 possessions. So zero would be your league average player. He's at 14.6. So that's outrageous. His true shooting percentage is at 63.8%. So the guy is unbelievable. He's an unbelievable offensive player. I think what's going to be fun to watch about Trey Young, and you'll really be able to understand what kind of player he is and if this is for real or not, is when he does go up against Big 12 talent and when they start to play conference games. I was telling somebody last night, too, as well, the Big 12 has five teams in the top 25 right now. They're a legit conference in basketball. They're like a powerhouse right now. They've got seven teams in the top 30. So once the Big 12 starts their conference play, and this starts at the beginning of the new year, I think Trey Young's going to go up against a ton of tough competition, and you're really going to see, you know, he's going to be able to play off those strengths, and we're going to maybe see some of his weaknesses as well. And I think that's going to give people a better idea of where he goes. Ultimately, right now, I think it's way too early to judge him. If I had to pick, I think he's a lottery pick just because of the given things that I said. I think most importantly because the point guard class is so weak, but then everything else he's doing too, and his pure skills, his ability to shoot from anywhere, his ability to pass the ball too, which is ridiculous. 22 assists in a game, tying the NCAA record. Like, that's insane. So I think his stock can only go as high, it can only go up from here. But I think we all just need to wait and see when he plays conference play and once they start playing legit teams.
Yeah, I think we'll absolutely learn more when we get to that part of Oklahoma's schedule and see how Trey Young handles that. But yeah, and I think that that's something else that should be noted as far as why people didn't necessarily pay attention or know who Trey Young was coming into the season, and now everybody's been kind of taken aback by how dominant he's been playing and the numbers he's putting up, is that because he came into a fairly ho-hum Oklahoma program this season. I mean, Oklahoma basketball doesn't get nearly the attention that Oklahoma football does, and for legitimate reasons. I mean, the Sooners are always in that, you know, the hunt for the college football playoff, whereas basketball is sort of second tier at that Big 12 school. And Trae Young actually passed up the opportunities to play for Kentucky and Kansas, two much more prominent basketball schools than Oklahoma. And because he did that and he chose Oklahoma and he grew up near the Oklahoma campus, so that was part of, you know, a factor of his decision, he wasn't on ESPN's top 100 list as he was, you know, playing his senior year of high school and averaging 40 points a game. And now it's looking like this guy could easily go top 10. The way he finishes the season and the way some other prospects pan out and finish their seasons, he could even be a potential top 5. And edge out Colin Sexton as the first point guard taken off the board. And I'm excited to see how it shakes out because he and Sexton have been very fun to watch. So
yeah, far. It's going to be fun to watch. And I think that's another testament to Trae Young's decision too, is like staying closer to home, being more confident, being comfortable with your surroundings. I mean, that can tell you a lot of how it can reflect your play. And I give him credit too. He didn't take those offers from Kentucky or some of these other bigger schools that maybe where he would have been drowned out at with other talent that gets, you know, starting spots. And with Kentucky being a powerhouse in the recruiting game for college is ridiculous. And some of these other schools too, as well, that maybe he was looking into. I think it's a cool decision for a player to do that and then go to another team and be able to really shine and have the opportunity to play so well, especially early on. The last time Oklahoma was really relevant and they were as good as they are now is like when Buddy Hield was on that team and he was dropping 45 in a trip. Like, the one game I always go back to is the triple overtime game against Kansas where he drops like 45 points in that game and he was just insane. So it'll be cool to watch, especially as Big 12 and conference play across the board gets started and we can kind of dive into some more of these college players and going up against more difficult competition as we get to it. So I've got one last question for us here in Mailbag. So this was sent in by Johnny. He said, everybody's talking about how bad the Bulls record was. And now with this recent winning streak and the talent that the Bulls have, looking at the 10 teams with better records right now or hanging around in that pool, I wouldn't want to trade situations with any of them. Would you guys rather be teams like the Clippers, Sacramento, Charlotte Hornets, or any of those other teams hanging around with the Bulls and trying to rebuild and figure out who they are? Would you trade places with any of them if you could right now?
That's an interesting question, and my first instinct is to say, not really. I don't know if I would rather be the Atlanta Hawks right now, or the Orlando Magic right now, or any of those other, you know, basement dwelling teams. And it's an interesting conversation, and one that is definitely worth being discussed. As far as where the Bulls are now, 20, you know, 30 or so games into year one of a rebuild with the pieces we have, I'm not necessarily sure I'd switch places with anybody. I mean, just like the name that comes to mind first when you're talking about rebuilding teams is the game that we got on deck tonight against Orlando. I mean, they have been drifting and aimless since they traded Dwight Howard. And that was a long time ago now. Think about how many stops Dwight Howard has made in different basketball cities since he left Orlando and took them to the finals in whatever that was, 2009 or 10. Rebuilds can take a very, very long time if you don't get lucky and make all of the correct moves. And I know Bulls fans, by and large, have skepticism and problems with some of the decisions the front office has made, and a lot of those grievances are justified. But you look at the pieces we got back in that Jimmy Butler trade, and you look at, ideally, optimistically, the Bulls, you know, kind of cutting out this winning streak and getting themselves a nice top three, at least top five lottery pick coming up next spring, and you feel good about that. And, I mean, the Bulls, with the pieces they have right now, you see that they're capable of beating some of the mid-tier teams in the league. The worry is that you don't want to be stuck in the middle. And the Bulls were stuck in the middle for probably a season or even two seasons too long. They made an adjustment to fix that. And I think based on the pieces they have and hopefully what the plan is moving forward, they're positioned a little bit better than some of the other teams that are kind of teetering the line between rebuilding and just not being competent enough to compete.
Yeah, I'm looking at these teams right now, so I'm thinking about, like, the Brooklyn Nets, the Charlotte Hornets, the Orlando Magic, the Atlanta Hawks, the Dallas Mavericks, the Memphis Grizzlies, the Sacramento Kings, the Phoenix Suns, the Clippers, and the Lakers. So if I had to look at any one of those teams, the only team that I probably would switch places with right now is probably the Lakers. If I had to, if we're just talking about specifically like rosters, swapping rosters, I think I'd take the Los Angeles Lakers roster. Honestly, I think it's a tough question to ask too, because then it follows with who's running the team. What spot are you in? We haven't really looked at all these players from a close like we have with the Bulls rebuild so far. I think the biggest point of it all is you don't want to end up a team, like you said, somewhere in the middle. So like a Pelicans team who has two superstars on their team and still can't find a way to figure it out. And you look at the Brooklyn Nets. While the Brooklyn Nets have put themselves in a really good position in terms of what they're trying to do moving forward, but they lost out on a lot of their first round picks. So that would be like taking on their first round picks too as well. You look at the Charlotte Hornets when the Bulls played the Charlotte Hornets. We talked about that. I asked you, like, looking 3-4 years down the road at a rebuild and not hitting on some of these picks, you could end up looking like a Charlotte Hornets team. And so that's why when we were talking about that, that was something big too as well. So I look at it right now, and I think each situation in the NBA is kind of unique. And if I had to pick it right now, and if the Bulls can find a way to stop this winning streak, I would probably say no. I mean, we're in a good position right now, especially with the lottery reform too. So it's all going to hinder on whether or not the Bulls can get that top five pick. But if I have to switch places with any team, sort of hanging around where the Bulls are right now, I probably wouldn't. I mean, even like, as bad as the Atlanta Hawks are, they have a couple of pieces, but I'm a little bit more thrilled with what the Bulls have in terms of young pieces that will be here in the future rather than just what's on the roster current day. So I probably wouldn't trade places with anybody either, especially because a lot of these teams, I feel like if you're bringing their roster over here, how do you develop those types of players? It's kind of an ongoing long conversation, but if I had to wrap it up, yeah, I don't think I would change spots with anybody
Before we move on to our closing segment, I just wanted to touch on Brooklyn again because you brought them up. I mean, you talk about a team that completely mortgaged their future when they put together that, you know, aging veterans trio of KG and Paul Pierce, bringing them to Brooklyn with Deron Williams running their offense. And that team flopped. Like, that team lost to a Derrick Rose-less Bulls team. Derrick Rose was out. Joakim Noah was playing on one foot with plantar fasciitis, and they couldn't beat them in the first round of the playoffs. And to get that roster together, you know, Mikhail Prokhorov sacrificed so many of their future first-round picks and things like that. And you look at where they are now, it's not ideal, but after mortgaging so many of their future assets to put together that team that went nowhere, you know, they've quietly put together some nice young pieces. You know, Jarrett Allen is still only 19. He was their draft pick this year, the center out of Texas. You got Spencer Dinwiddie, who at age 24 looks like a great value, somebody the Bulls missed out on. Okafor, you know, in that recent trade with Philly, hopefully he can turn his NBA career around. I know you and I both didn't really think he was a fit here in Chicago, but he's still only 22. Maybe he has something left to prove. And D'Angelo Russell, still only 21 years old. So, like, they've managed to make some corrections for the mistakes they've made in the past. And, you know, the Brooklyn Nets aren't going to be world beaters anytime soon, but at least they've managed to get themselves in a more positive direction after making mistakes. And so the correlation there is, I know Bulls fans are upset with some of the decisions that have been made, and some of you probably still don't believe that trading Jimmy and getting the pieces we got for him in return was the right move. I would disagree with you. I think it was the right move, but even some of the past mistakes, the Doug McDermott and Taj for campaign trade where we lost a second round pick, and the Michael Carter Williams trade, and, you know, the list goes on. Those are in the past, and you can be bitter about them, and you can say, hey, front office, you screwed the pooch on that one. But there is optimism for getting things right and making corrections moving forward. And where the Bulls are now and the pieces the Bulls have now, I think that the front office has potential to build on a couple of recent hits. moving past their recent misses. And when it comes to comparing themselves to other rebuilding teams across the league, they're decently situated right now.
I look at the teams that are sitting at the bottom of the league. You could point pretty much at every one of these teams and find mistakes that were made throughout the organization. Like, there's a reason why they're sitting at this point, this low in the conference. They've made mistakes in the past. Like, just teams in the East. Like, you talked about the Nets with their whole debacle of trading away their future. I look at the Hornets. Since they started as a franchise in Charlotte, they've never been really that good. And it's taken them this long, and look at where they are right now. You talked about the Magic, too, as well. They missed on a lot of picks. They signed guys like Evan Fournier to big money and haven't turned out to be the players that they thought they were going to be. The only team that I can really say that, like, completely tore everything down and sort of made parallel moves to what the Bulls tried to do here would be the Atlanta Hawks. They got rid of everybody. Like, they were a playoff team, what, 2 years ago? And they went on that long streak with guys like Kyle Korver and Jeff Teague. What was that, two, three years ago? So they tore everything down. They even got rid of their hometown guy, Dwight Howard. They tore everything down. So that would be like the other team that I'm thinking of that did sort of what the Bulls were trying to do here. But in terms of being like in a best case scenario, best position in terms of being a competitive team, I think the Bulls are in a pretty decent spot. That is saying that the Bulls do land that top five pick. So
before we get to our last segment, we're going to touch on an interesting Chris Dunn story came out earlier this week. But before we do that, Jordan, I want to talk to our Locked On Bulls listeners about Draft. Fantasy sports fans, listen up. Did you know that your chances of winning on Draft are 80% better than on any other salary cap sites? That's why Draft is my favorite fantasy site. No more getting crushed by the pros who do it all day, every day. And it's not just me. More than 1 million people that have already downloaded Draft are playing it and loving it. Play in a real live NBA draft right now. You can be done in under 5 minutes and get paid out the very next day. Drafts are filling every second, so you can join whenever you want. All new players get a free entry, too, into a real money draft. All you got to do is make your first deposit and use the promo code LOBULLS. That's right, play in a real money draft for free just by using your promo code LOBULLS. But it gets even better. Draft is so sure you'll love it that they're even offering Locked On Bulls listeners a money-back guarantee up to $100. Just search Draft in your app store or go to draft.com and come play for free right now with promo code LOBULLS.
So did you ever know about the background story to Chris Dunn? Have you ever kind of looked it up? Because I know we talked about Bobby Portis a couple of months ago. When the fight did happen, and I kind of prefaced it with his background, and I don't think a lot of Bulls fans knew about this. But there was an interesting story that happened on Monday besides the Bulls extending their win streak. Chris Dunn's family showed up at the game to watch the Bulls play the 76ers. And what I got interested in about it is Chris Dunn tweeted something about playing in front of his pops was like one of the best things ever. He also held up an L sign, kind of talking about New London, Connecticut is kind of where he's from. And so I had to dive a little bit deeper, and I know there's a couple other places that were similar to this story, but I thought it was really cool, and it's kind of an uplifting and really awesome story about Chris Dunn. So Chris Dunn, he didn't really have a typical father figure when he was growing up, and USA Today kind of profiled this when Chris Dunn was in the draft, and him and his brother were taken at 1 year old by his mom and moved to Alexandria, Virginia, where Chris Dunn lived, and taken away from his parents. After a couple run-ins with the law, Chris Dunn and his brother had to find different ways to fend for themselves as a child, whether it was Chris Dunn playing pickup games for guys for money or his brother hustling, whatever he needed to do to survive. And not having that father figure and that father role in his life was pretty big. And so USA Today says Chris Dunn was quoted here saying that when his brother went up to meet his dad for the first time in Connecticut to get some food, to get some clothes, all this other, a couple other things. He says, I almost felt like it was unfair that my brother got to meet my father and I didn't. I guess it wasn't the right time. Chris Dunn told USA Today Sports about this first bit of contact the boys had with their father. I was very intrigued to meet my father. I wanted someone who could teach me how to be a man, just having a father figure around, someone that I could just talk to about any situation, having that relationship that fathers and sons should definitely have. So his mom troubled past and he grew up in a really difficult situation, and being able to make it all the way to the NBA, I think, is a really cool story. And it talks about how him and his dad reconnected, and his dad obviously having another family, but they all came out to the game against the 76ers, and he was able to play in front of his dad. And the tweet was really cool as well. So it was kind of it gives you a little bit of a glimpse into Chris Dunn's background and where he's come from and how much he's fought through. And I think that goes over the head of a lot of sports fans a lot of times, is where these guys came from, the struggle that they endured to get to the point that they're at. And so many different people have so many different backgrounds and how hard they push to get to that point. And I'm not saying nobody else has those types of stories, but when they do pop up in sports, I think it's really awesome. But did you know anything about Chris Dunn's background at all before he came to the Bulls?
I knew a little bit. I had heard a fraction of that story, or a version of that story of his upbringing, but not to the extent and detail of the recent, feature pieces and videos and the interview that he did that have come out recently, and some of the words that were spoken by both his older brother and his father. So really touching stuff. It's always nice when you hear about the trials and tribulations of these professional athletes that represent your town, your city, your team, and where they are now compared to what they had to go through to get there. And it's a really inspiring story. And we've talked about how Zach LaVine is sort of pegged to be that guy, to be the face of the Bulls franchise. He's excited to be here. He wants to be that guy, a very warm, welcoming, open personality, wants to be that guy to interact with the fans. And I think, this Chris Dunn story kind of brings along something else we've talked about, which is that Chris Dunn can be that guy too. And Chris Dunn is excited to be here. He was excited to get a fresh start after a frustrating rookie year in Minnesota. And as you talk about, we talked in yesterday's episode about maybe the fact that Robin Lopez won't get traded because the Bulls love his leadership. But you look to who among the younger guys can be the leaders of the future, the next generation of this Bulls rebuild. And you hope that LaVine can be that guy. And I think with his strong representation of character and resolve from this story of his upbringing and his background, there's a lot of confidence that Chris Dunn can be that guy too.
Yeah, it's really an incredible story, and it's an incredible story from the version of just, I'm going to tweet the link on Twitter as well. This goes all the way back to 2016, but the full article that I can't do it justice here, and I don't want to read it all to you, but I will link that article on Twitter. But another thing is that Chris Dunn's father made it an effort to try and find these boys. His mom, with a troubled past, had been locked up for months. And it even details that Chris Dunn and his brother told nobody. And when I was talking about how they were trying to find ways to make the money to make ends meet, even as just young guys, they had to find a way to survive, and so they wouldn't get separated or taken away. And so I think it's just incredible. And his father, John Selden, eventually was able to make contact with them after numerous different avenues, and took the boys away from Virginia and brought them back to Connecticut to live with his other family. And so I think it's an inspiring story, especially around the holidays. I know we all like to talk about these stories, but I thought it was really cool for it all to come full circle for Chris Dunn and be able to play in front of his family at the highest level on a team and playing confidently and playing well too. I think that was the biggest part, is just all the emotions that go into a game of playing in front of your family or trying to impress your family or anybody really that's important to you in your life. And so I think this was an awesome story for Chris Dunn and just an awesome story in general. And it makes everybody remind themselves kind of where they came from, and whether you're fortunate or less fortunate than this, it makes you kind of connect as a human being for once, instead of just a basketball player that's making millions of dollars. So with that, I think that's going to bug. about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Remember, you can follow us on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls underscore Peck. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Live on Dash Radio Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday. That's tomorrow morning on Dash Radio, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, Dash Radio. Download the Dash Radio app today. We're on the Nothing But Net channel. Tomorrow we'll bring you recap of the game tonight. Hopefully you enjoy the game if you get a chance to watch it. Have a great and safe night. We'll be back tomorrow with a brand new episode.